Rabbi Elisha Prero will lead us in saying a few kapilah tehillim.
These tehillim are on the handouts and the materials that you have. First one is Perek Pei Gimel, and then Kuflamed. Shir Mizmor L'Asav Elohim Adon Milach Al Techerash V'Al Tishkodem Ki Hine Oyevech Oyem Oyo Numasanecho Nasu Uro Alamecho Yari Musa Visio Atsu Altsunecho Omru Luchuvenachi de Migoi Velo Yizoche Shem Yisrael Kino Atsu Lev Yachdo Volecho Beris Yichrosu Ohale Edom Yishmeli Moav Agrim Gavol Vamon Vamolek Peleshes Im Yoshev Eitzor Gam Ashur Nilvo Imom Hoyuzroa Livnei Lotzelon Al Selohem Kimidyon Kisisyoch Yovim Benachal Kishon Nishmedu Be'en Dor Hoyudom Elo Adomo Shisemo Nidivemo Korei V'chizei V'chizevach V'chizamuno Kol Nesichemo Asher Amaru Nir Shalonu Eis Naos Elohim Elohai Shisemo Chagalgal Kekash Lifnei Ruach Keesh Tivar Yo'ar Chulehovot Lahed Horim Kainter the fame besarecho v'sufasecho tevahalem Malef nehem kolon v'yolakshu shimcho Adonai Yevo shuvi bohalu adayad v'yachperu v'yovedu Vieda o kiata shimcha adonai levadecha elyon al kol haaretz. Perek Kuflamed. Shir ha-ma'aloz mima'amakim karosicha adonai. Adonai shimo v'koli tihien oz necho kashuvo so kol tachanunoi im avonos tishmor yo Adonai mi ya'amod ki imecho asalicho lema'an tivorech Ki visi Adonai, ki veso nafshi, v'lidvaro hocholti. Nafshi l'Adonoi, mishomrim laboker, shomrim laboker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonoi, kim Adonoi hachesed v'harbeim ofedus. V'ho yivdes Yisrael mikol avonosos. We'll say the Achenu together. Achenu kol beis Yisrael, hanesunim b'tzarov shivya, homdim bein bayom ubein bayav ashoa, hamakom rachem aleihem v'yotzei mitzor levacha, me'afelo li'ora, mishibud l'gula, hashto ba'agolov izman koriv v'lomar amein.
Thank you all for joining us tonight for the Askara, for our good friend and family member, Brad Jacobs, Chaim Betzalel ben Binyamin, Utvasha Golda, Zichrono Livracha. It is hard to believe that it has been 10 years since the Petiva of Brad. Brad was an integral part of our lives and the Jewish lives of the entire Jewish community. He was a good friend who we could always count on in a minute's notice. He was a loving son and brother and uncle, dedicated always to care and love for his family. He was a person who cherished emes and was straight and earnest in his words. He was an indefatigable fighter for the Jewish people, Eretz Yisrael, and Medinas Yisrael. For almost two decades, he labored nonstop to produce a weekly newsletter, the Israel News, which was delivered free of charge to thousands of people who read it cover to cover to receive a clear understanding of the situation of our brothers and sisters in Israel. All of us look forward to receiving the Israel News each Shabbos. Brad was a strong and brave person of clear thought and unafraid to say so, and this was true both before and after his illness. He was an inspiration to all of us. We have gathered here to remember Brad Zichrono Livracha, to learn Torah L'Ilui Nishmaso, to daven L'Ilui Nishmaso, and to speak of Brad's work for Klal Yisrael. This is most appropriate as Brad was a Jew immersed in and characterized by Torah, Tefillah, and tireless work on behalf of the Klal. We would like to thank the many people who helped in this event, his good friend Joel Jacobson, other people, friends, his sister Cheryl Jacobs Lewin, Rabbi Eisenberg, and the Religious Zionists of Chicago, each of the people who will be teaching, speaking, and davening tonight, Laser Lloyd, and all of you have come together to remember and to be inspired by Brad Zichron Livracha. Hagaon Rav Moshe Salvechik was a Rebbe of Brad Zichron Livracha in Yeshivas Brisk, and knew Brad Zichron Livracha since Brad's elementary school days. We are honored that Rav Salvechik will now teach us some Torah. Le'ilui Nishmas, Brad Zichron Livracha.
There's no clock here, so it's very difficult to speak at an askara for Brad. The relationship, a Rebbe, a teacher, Brad was in the first class that I taught at Brisk, and somehow the relationship that a teacher has with students who he was close with, the students, in a sense, don't grow up. It's still they remain boys, and that makes speaking at an askara even more difficult than it would be otherwise. I was told to speak about Eretz Yisrael, and I want to talk also about things that I remember about bread. I'll start by saying over a certain thought that I heard from my father's Atzal. I should point out that the two people in my life who I saw that were able to overcome hardships, physical disabilities, and to work on behalf of Torah, on behalf of Eretz Yisrael, the two who stand out most in my mind are my father Zatzal and Brad Zatzal. And there was a member, Cheryl mentioned to me, that the first time Brad was sick, they would give him tapes of my father's speech when he was somewhat out of it, and a big smile would go on his face. Brad felt a special closeness to my father, and I see myself not just speaking on my behalf, which I am, but in a sense, I'm an agent of my father in speaking about bread. In Parsha Shlach, the Torah tells us about the 12 spies that were sent out by Moshe Rabbeinu to search out the land of Eretz Yisrael. Two spies, Yehoshua and Kalev, gave a positive report. Olo nale v'yarashnu oso. Let us go up and we will conquer and inherit the land. But 10 spies, they spoke of the hardship that was involved. And we have to understand, the 10 spies who went out, these, when they left, Rashi says, Anashim Tzadikim. And with the exception of Kalev, who went to Hebron, all the spies saw the same thing. They saw the same cities. They saw the same military installations. They saw the same armies. They saw the same Canaanites. And yet two gave a report of Olo Nala, we can do it. Eretz Yisrael is ours. And 10 tried to discourage the Jewish people from going up. Why this difference? My father said that the difference was in their attitude towards Eretz Yisrael. My father would talk about logic of the mind and logic of the heart. Logic of the mind is mathematical or scientific. It's called logic. It's evaluation. Logic of the heart manifests itself in emotions. My father suggested that on the basis of cold logic, the 10 miraglim were correct. The Jewish people would not be able to overcome the mighty Canaanite nations. However, Yehoshua and Kalev, they understood that we cannot have an attitude of logic of the mind in regard to Eretz Yisrael. Logic of the mind, as I mentioned, is a mathematical or a scientific logic. Logic of the heart is emotional. It involves feeling. And the Jewish people have to have, we refer to Eretz Yisrael as an Eretz Chemda. What does Chemda mean? It's a land that we covet. What does covet mean? We talk about the prohibition in the Aseres HaDibros of Lo Sachmod. The Rambam defines Lo Sachmod as a desire for something, but the desire is so strong that one can't control themselves and they have to have act, they have to do something to because of that desire. One can be jealous of somebody else because the person has a nice house. But that's not coveting. But if somebody takes action to try to take the house, that desire doesn't let him alone until he does something to try to take the house, that's chemda. And in regard to, in Lo Sachma, we're not allowed to have chemda. But in regard to Eretz Yisrael, we are required to have an attitude of chemda. And this was the difference. When you view it from pure logic, it's not worth the battle. But if you consider Eretz Yisrael and Eretz Chemda, then I'm going to fight no matter what, and I'm going to get it no matter what. There are very few people today that view Eretz Yisrael as an Eretz Chemda. I remember I was a young student after the Six-Day War. The emotions that everybody had. Everybody, no one would have wanted to give away a piece of land of Eretz Yisrael. But what happened? To quote Rashi at the beginning of Bereishis, the Umos HaOlam said, "Listem atem, you stole it." And when they repeated it time and time again, Rashi says, all of Chumash Bereishis is there to tell us that Eretz Yisrael is ours. And if the nations of the world tell us that we took it, we stole it. So we say, Bereishis Bara Elokim, it belongs to God and God gave it to us. So, the nations of the world, imagine, you're sitting at the UN and the representative of Syria, Saudi Arabia, gets up and he says, the Jews stole Eretz Yisrael from the Palestinians. And then the ambassador from Eretz Yisrael will come and take out a Chumash Bereishis and read, Bereishis Bara Elokim Es HaShamayim Ves HaAretz. God created heaven and earth. You think that'll make have an impact? You think the ambassador of Saudi Arabia say, oh, you're right, I made a mistake. But what happens, unfortunately, is as a result of the nations of the world screaming, listem atem, it has an effect on us. And all these people that after the Six-Day War we're speaking, we're taking oath that we won't give away one inch of land. Little by little, their attitudes changed. Just as little by little, the attitudes changed in regard to the establishment of a Palestinian state. And on the basis of cold logic, there might be an argument for it. But if somebody sees Eretz Yisrael as an Eretz Chemda, I can't give it back. And if there was anybody in our community who saw Eretz Yisrael as an Eretz Chemda, it was Brad. And if today some people in a minute way have that attitude, undoubtedly it's because of the influence of Brad. It's interesting, in this week's Sedra, the Torah tells us, gives the Shira. And the Shira is written in a unique way, different than the rest of the Torah. In the Shira is written in such a way that there is more empty space than space for the written word. And the question is why? And my father would say, and this is in line with the thought I've mentioned in his name previously, that the reason is because words can give over a message. But there are certain messages of feelings and messages of emotions that words are limited and can't give over. But a tune, a song, sometimes can give over a message that the words themselves can't give. So in the Shira part of the Torah, in the song part of the Torah, there is more empty space than there is written space, because the message of Shira is not limited to its words. It's contained in the tune also. This is the idea of logic of the heart. Shira is based on logic of the heart. Brad, as I mentioned, had an attitude, viewed Eretz Yisrael from the perspective of logic of the heart. But it wasn't just Eretz Yisrael that he viewed from the perspective of logic of the heart. I think that it was his devotion to the whole Torah. I don't think that Brad saw Eretz Yisrael as something, in fact, I'm sure, he didn't see it as something separate from the Torah. He saw it as part of the Torah. And the idea of Shira, the tune of Torah. He had not only the words of Torah, he had the tune of Torah. The words of Torah we learn in yeshiva. We learn when we attend shiurim. But the tune of Torah, that can't be taught. That has to be felt. It has to come from the person himself. The first time I met Brad, Shapsa mentioned that I knew Brad from the time he was in elementary school. But even before he was in day school. That's why I just checked with Cheryl as to what Talmud Torah he went. At the Hebrew Theological College, I think this was probably 1968. There was a student, Phil Miller, Zichrono Livracha, passed away at a young age. And Phil Miller was a fellow who felt that he had a mission. Teaching in Talmud Torah was not just a job. There was a mission. And he was determined to bring children closer to the learning of Torah. One Shabbos, he took three boys from the Skokie community. And you have to understand that the Skokie community at that time did not have the Torah institutions. This area of Skokie did not have the Torah institutions. I think it had one Orthodox synagogue, the Iranian synagogue at that time, and that you have today. And Brad was one of those three students. And he asked me, why he asked me, I don't know. I was a young college student at the time. He asked me, he wanted some of the older boys to speak with these boys. So I was one of those boys that Phil Miller asked to speak to these three boys. And then, after Shabbos was over, might have been Sunday, I don't remember anymore, so Phil Miller was talking about all three boys. And he said all three of them had potential. But he pointed to Brad and he said, this one is special. And we all know that Phil Miller was right. Brad was special. Now, the question arises, at that point, he was not yet in a day school. The community wasn't as strong as it is today from a Torah perspective. How did Brad have this attitude? But the answer is, he might not yet have had so many words of Torah, but the tune of Torah he had. There's a medrash that says that when a child, I don't know that it has to be taken literally, but when a child, before he's born, he's taught the whole Torah. And then a malach comes and hits him on the mouth, over the mouth, and he forgets his learning. He might forget the words of Torah. The tune of Torah he doesn't have to forget. Brad was the type. Brad was special, that the malach might have taken the words of Torah out of his mouth, but the tune of Torah remained with him. And emotions over ideas, over cold evaluation, I saw with Brad another time. This was before Brad was transferred to University of Chicago when he was in Northwestern Hospital for, I don't know, it was a day, whatever it was. And I got a message that time. My children were in the hospital, but I got a message that Brad wanted to see me. And I went there, and Brad said to me, he told me what the situation was, and he was losing conscious, but in and out of conscious at the time. And he said to me, I want you to talk to your father whether halachically I should take this operation or not. And not to take the operation was a sentence of death. But Brad did not want to have that operation unless halachically he should have that. He felt that operation. And he asked me to talk to my father, and he said to me, he'll do only in accordance with what my father told him. Mesiras Nefesh, giving one's life over, putting one's life on the line, is not something that a person can do intellectually. That requires an emotional commitment. You have to put your intellect down. But that was Brad. Brad was ready to be Moser Nefesh, ready to give over his life. The operation was successful, so he was Mekadesh Shem Shemayim another way. There are those who are Mekadesh Shem Shemayim that sanctify the name of God in dying in sanctification of the name of God. And there are those that sanctify the name of God in living in sanctification of the name of God. When the operation was successful, Brad, I think, demonstrated that he's not only ready to sanctify God's name and die in sanctification in God's name, but his devotion, his dedication to Torah, to Eretz Yisrael, to the Jewish people, was a demonstration of his willingness and his determination, his emotional determination of living in sanctification of God's name. And now that Brad isn't here 10 years, we have to have his memory inspire us that in dedication to Torah, in dedication to Eretz Yisrael, and in living in sanctification of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name.
Rabbi Elisha Prero, rabbi of Young Israel West Rogers Park, close friend of Brad over very many decades, will say a few words.
Before I start my remarks, I'd like to say Misha Baruch for Rani Slovin, who is in need of a Rufuah Shleimah. Misha Baruch Avosenu Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov Moshe Aaron David Shlomo Yivarech Esachola Ruven David Ben Chana Bavur Shana Mispalim Bavuro B'schazel Kadosh Baruch Hu Yimalei Rachamim Alav Lachimol Rapozol Lachziko Lachyoso Vishlach lo meher refuah shleimah l'shamayim l'ramachev v'rav v'shesog yidav b'soch sh'or cholei Yisrael refuah sanefesh refuah saguf hashtob bagalov v'zman koriv nomar amen. It's I was thinking about it. It's about some 20 years ago that this room and over there when this was Or Torah was filled to capacity to hear Ariel Sharon speak in opposition to the Oslo Accords. And this was Brad's doing. I don't know if he was the only one. I know that he asked me to be involved. I was sitting probably in just about where I am now. There was nothing that Brad didn't take on if he thought it was going to make a difference. Chazal teach us in the Rishalmi, Ein osin nefoshos letzadikim divrehem hein zichronim. We don't erect monuments for tzadikim. Their words, one might even be expansive in saying divrehem, their deeds, their doings, their matters, are themselves their remembrance. It's what they said and what they did that testifies to their greatness. Brad Jacobs was a great man. He was strong-minded, he was compassionate, he was determined, he was realistic. He suffered greatly in this world, and he had a persistent sense of ironic humor. We know that he published Israel News. I had the good fortune to be his lawyer. So, Israel News was published by a company called the Morasha Network, Inc. Brad had an opportunity to open a different business. And he told me he wanted to call the company, the new corporation, the Morris Shaw Network. I said, who's Morris Shaw? He says, my first company is Morris Shaw, and when I talk to non-Jews and I say Morris Shaw Network, all they hear is Morris Shaw. So now he wants to open up the Morris Shaw Network. He burned with passion for the land of Israel and for the people of Israel. As early as I can remember, Brad was a man of principle. When we were both students at Yeshivas Brisk at its inception in 1974. Brad was a little bit younger than I. But we ended up in 1978, we were both in Yeshivat Har Etzion and we were chavrusas. We used to kibitz because at the yeshiva they had a list for people who had to do shmirah, who had to do guard duty. And they would walk in, they would call me Ferraro, and they would call him Bardali DeZakob, because they wrote Bradley, they took it off, I assume they took it off of some, they didn't write his Hebrew name, they wrote his legal name. So they wrote Beis Reish Dalet Lamed Yud. So we say that's Bradley. If an Israeli reads it, it's Bardali. So, and Dalet, Chupchik, Zion, Kuf, Vav, Beis. So, we say Jake, it was actually, should have been a Samach at the end, but we would say Jacobs, they said DeZakob. So his name was Bardali DeZakob. So Brad and I once went to see a Rav in Yerushalayim, well known for his wisdom and his insight, Rabbi Chaim Lifshitz, Zichron Levracha. And most of us in our late teens, early 20s, were preoccupied with our personal development. But Brad, when he went to see Rabbi Lifshitz, he went to ask for a divrei chizuk, for words of encouragement about the situation in Eretz Yisrael. That was Brad. And a couple of years before Brad passed away, he recounted to me the words that Rabbi Lifshitz told him. He said, "The fact that we are still here at all shows that the divine providence is protecting the Jews and the state of Israel." While Brad was alive and publishing his Israel news, we came to rely on it as our primary source for keeping abreast of developments in Israel. How did he come to publish Israel news? This yeshiva bachur trained as an accountant. What does he have to do with publishing? Well, he was so incensed that the news that was commonly available about Israel was skewed and inaccurate, especially in the wake of the Oslo Accords. So Brad, who was near death many times in his life and who had so many physical challenges that they're almost impossible to recount, instead of simply complaining, he did something about it. At his levaya, I quoted the words of Brad's utterly devoted sister, Cheryl, when commenting on the propriety of placing an Israeli flag on Brad's casket. Cheryl said, "He was a soldier for the state of Israel. But he would never compromise his principles. He was entirely dedicated to doing the right thing." As Rav Moshe said, he frequently sought the guidance of his mentor, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. Brad was considering a demonstration against the evacuation of the settlements of Gush Katif. In an email to me, the summer before Brad passed, he wrote, I'm going to read it. "About 10 years ago, we held a protest in front of the Israeli consulate over Oslo. I asked Rav Aaron at the time if he thought it was okay. He was silent for about 2 minutes when the Rebbetzin called out from the kitchen, 'Aaron, what's the problem?' Rav Aaron then said, 'It is okay, but we have to make sure that there will be no name calling and the like.' In all honesty, I did not think that name calling would have been such a terrible issue, but he was most adamant about it. I shared this with Rabbi Moskowitz at the time. Several months later, when Rabin was assassinated, both Rabbi Moskowitz and I made the same observation of how fortunate we were to have had Rav Aaron to ask." After Rav Aaron passed away, Brad, like many of Rav Aaron's students, felt bereft. Brad wrote to me, again, I'm reading, "There are really times when I miss the sage advice of Rav Aaron, who could put things in both a halachic perspective as well as a historical perspective." Brad always sought to do that which was right in the eyes of Torah. In May, before he passed, Brad wrote to me, "I have decided to ask a psak, that's a halachic ruling, on the issue. Even if it is permissible, I also seek etza, advice, and have left a message for Rabbi Azos to give me a call." In November of 2004, he wrote on a different sensitive matter, "I'm not trying to put this decision off on you, but do you think that the Chicago Jewish community would be put at risk if I run this story in the paper?" He was exquisitely sensitive to issues of the common good, the state of Israel, the people of Israel, and the truth. He was a religious Zionist who put Torah and halacha first. Brad was fiercely loyal to his friends, and they were to him. Some 15 years before he passed away, the community rallied to his side when he was sick. He was especially close with Rabbi Giffen, who was devoted to him. And Brad didn't just seek advice, he gave advice. He was wise. I was once asked to be on a panel at the Art Institute. The panel was devoted to the topic of the effect of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict on Jewish identity. There were two left-wing members of the panel, and I was chosen to be the right-wing zealot, I guess. I figured at the Art Institute, with somebody from Not In My Name on one side and from another organization on the other side, what's the point? So I called Brad. So first he gave me the skinny on the two participants, which he knew. I said, Brad, what am I going to say? What am I going to say that's going to make any difference to these people? He said, teach them Torah. Forget about politics. It was brilliant. When I got up to speak, everybody had an opportunity to give introductory remarks. So I said, to put this discussion in context, there are much more fundamental differences than what we think about the current political situation in Israel. I said, I'm an Orthodox Jew. I believe I'm committed to the principle that God created the world and he gave us the Torah. And in the Torah, he tells us what he wants of us. And in principle, I don't always, sometimes I fall short, but in principle, I'm committed to deciphering what it is that God wants and doing his will. And at the discussion, somebody said, I have a question for the two panelists. Not for the rabbi, but for the two panelists. And then proceeded to say, to ask, how do they seek guidance or what's their relationship to the Torah as they approach matters dealing with Israel? If it weren't for Brad Jacobs, that consciousness wouldn't have been risen. That nobody would have talked in terms of Torah. But it was Brad. I was his mouthpiece at this panel. Just before Brad passed away, he and I danced at my son's wedding in Los Angeles. And I only learned later from Cheryl about how he had driven 5 hours each way in a car with hand controls in order to get to the wedding. Brad felt the pain and the joy of his fellow Jews. He was especially concerned for the young children of the Cohn family who lost limbs in a terrorist attack in Kfar Duma. He went to Israel and he visited the family, and he was inspired by their Simchas HaChaim, by their joie de vivre, by their positive attitude. I don't know many people who faced the kinds of challenges in life that Brad faced or who had his Simchas HaChaim. Recently, I undertook a project that in large part was inspired by Brad's reflexive response that we have to do something. In November, a young yeshiva boy in Israel, Ezra Schwartz, was murdered by Palestinian terrorists. Came from Sharon, Massachusetts. He had attended Maimonides. And I watched the live stream of his funeral. At his funeral, more than one of the maspidim, of the eulogizers, mentioned that Ezra had undertaken to complete the study of Tanakh, of all 24 books of Tanakh. But he was murdered before he had the opportunity. Following the Levaya, I just had this thought. We have to learn Tanakh for Ezra. So I called the family's rabbi, and we arranged, set up an email, learntanakhforezra@gmail.com. We arranged that people would be encouraged to learn Tanakh every day. Lezechar Nishmas Ezra Schwartz. And then as somebody completes a sefer, a book of Tanakh, you send an email to the family. It's very simple. Learn Tanakh for Ezra at gmail.com. I completed Sefer Yoshua, Sefer Shoftim, Sefer Malachim, Yeshaya, whatever it is, Lezecher Nishmas, Ezra Schwartz. I want to suggest that we do the same thing. We do it for Ezra, and we do it Lezecher Nishmas, Brad Jacobs. There is, I can afford to be, a holy roller now because I started the project myself. But the book is in everybody's, on everybody's bookshelf. It's God's word to the Jews. I shudder at the thought of, after 120 years, and we all face the heavenly court, we may be asked, Mein Kind, did you learn my book? I'd like to suggest, as I have not 99%, but 100% confidence, that this would have been Brad's project had he been alive. As Rav Moshe Soloveitchik said, that he spoke in the name of Rav Aaron as a sense, as his agent, I feel confident that I can speak in Brad's name. Brad was so dedicated to the Torah, and so dedicated to the people of Israel, and so dedicated to Eretz Yisrael. And this is what Tanakh is all about. I'm suggesting we can walk away not just saying, I can't believe it was 10 years, not just saying he was such a good guy, but doing something, Lezecher Nishmas, Brad Jacobs, to take it upon ourselves to learn Tanakh, and not just a little bit, and not just the Perek, to learn the entire Tanakh, however long it takes. If you don't start, you certainly will never complete it. If you learn a little bit, a page in English, one page a day, you'll finish it in 2 years. Brad was a living embodiment of the observation, Ein davar omed b'fnei ratzon. There is nothing that stands in the way of the will. This was Brad Jacobs. I still have a picture of Brad in a frame on my credenza in my office that I took. It's black and white on film that I took when we were in yeshiva together. He is my inspiration. May his memory inspire us all.
Mr. Jack Berger, good friend, close confidant, and longtime collaborator with Brad on pro-Israel and pro-Jewish activities, let's say a few words.
Before I begin, I'll say a few words. When he didn't get the right answers from me, he would go to the rabbis. And let me tell you, we had many a fight because I had a little different perspective on things. Rabbi Soloveitchik, Rabbi Pero, Cheryl, and friends. The author Jules Pfeiffer once wrote, "Time is like an embezzler. It stays up at night juggling the books so you don't know anything's missing." It's hard to believe it's been 10 years, but it has been 10 years since Gush Katif, so I guess the math is right. For those who knew Brad, he and I were a bit of an odd couple. He was almost always the gentleman. I was not. Recently, I had lunch with a rabbi who I had embarrassed to kind of make peace. And he asked me, "Why do you always embarrass people publicly?" And I said, "Rabbi, what good would it do to embarrass them privately?" He argued that it wasn't Jewish. I said, "Excuse me, There's a line in Leviticus 19:14. You shall not place a stumbling block in front of the blind. Jewish people are usually blind, and I have to open their eyes. It's my job. Brad and I first met at the Jewish Community Relations Council of the Federation shortly after the fairy dust of peace called Oslo was spread over the eyes of too many Jews. At one particular JCRC meeting, there was a heated exchange between me and the head of the Reform movement, which wasn't unusual, Rabbi Ira Yudevin, where they almost kicked me out. It's always almost, because they're deathly afraid, honestly, that I'll write about them in the Chicago Jewish News, which I will. And he said to me as I was leaving, "Are you nuts?" So I walked over and I said, "Who's asking?" He said, he introduced himself as Bradley Jacobs. I said, "What are you doing here?" He said, "I represent the religious Zionists." I said, "Who are they? Do they actually do anything?" The one thing I think we all remember from Brad is his wonderful chuckle. And he had me at that chuckle. From then on, we began calling one another two or three times a week. And there were times, obviously, when I gave him advice that he didn't take. He would always say to me, "Well, you know, let me think about it," which then meant he was going to call one of you guys, and that would put the kibosh on most of my ideas. I will tell you one private secret. It's not in my notes, but I figure we're all mishpucha. Oftentimes, I was quoted in the Chicago Jew, in the Chicago Jews, sorry, in Israel News. The issue was always something that was bothering Brad. So we got to this point, and I said, "Brad, what's bothering you?" And he told me, and I said, "Why don't you put it in the Chicago Jewish News?" He said, "I can't, because of you guys." So I said, "Tell you what, surprise me. Put it in the Chicago Jewish News under some quote. Use my name. I don't care." He was the only person I have ever said, "You can use my name to do whatever you think is right." And that was his way of sort of at least getting some of his frustrations out. Talking about Brad is something that I look back on. To have known somebody this special in my life was unusual. He was part of my Baal Tshuva return to being a Jew and a Zionist. I could talk to him about anything. I could show my total ignorance. You have to realize 30 years ago when they talked to me about a thing called the Torah, meant nothing. His calming wisdom, his illumination of different ideas and concepts, he was very patient with me. I didn't always agree with him, but when he talked, I listened. It's not something I often do except for my wife. I talk, she talks, I listen. Back then, I was pretty new at understanding Israel. Brad and I both grew up in Skokie, he at Monticello in Maine, and I at Kildare in Howard. He went to Shul, and I, in fact, was the very first bar mitzvah at Skokie Valley Traditional, a few blocks away, with Rabbi Milton Cantor of blessed memory. But after that excruciating experience, I rarely bothered. Brad stayed with the program. I couldn't get out fast enough. Brad ate kosher, I ate at Big Herm's. We both grew up in Skokie, yet we grew up worlds apart. But as it said, man plans, God laughs. There's a story about a town fool showing off his inane tricks in the main square of a town as hundreds of onlookers jeered and laughed, except for one young man. Asked why he was not laughing and jeering, he replied, "I too would laugh, except for the fact that the town fool is my Jewish brother." That sums up Brad's compassion for his fellow Jews, really. As described in the Jewish Star editorial recalling Brad Stein's words, "Brothers and sisters, we are all in this together. The town fools were those pro-Oslo Rabins, Paris's Balins, the Eric Yaffes, the leftist Jewish newspapers, the so-called experts on the Middle East, and the riffraff of various Jewish organizations. back when busloads of Jews were being blown up on the streets of Israel, accompanied by the inane narrative that dead Jews were somehow sacrifices for peace, and peace was just around the corner, too often it was Brad who personally took the barbs aimed at the anti-Oslo crowd, from the likes of the Chicago Jewish News and the Jewish Star. I felt that I was left out. Brad was always the one getting the covet of being anti-Oslo. I'll never forgive them. The rivers of Jewish blood, some of those Jews eventually came to their senses, or after rivers of Jewish blood, they came to their senses, how could they not, after stepping over 1,600 dead Jews. As Doug Wertheimer, the Jewish Star, wrote in his remembrance of Brad on January 27, 2006, quote, from the mid-1990s, Brad Jacobs of Skokie was one of the area's leading opponents of the Oslo Accords. At the time, most Jewish Chicagoans supported the efforts of the Rabin government to hammer out an agreement with Yasser Arafat. How could some be so gullible? How could some be so stupid? A professional journalist so misinformed. Was he hiding under a rock when Arafat was inciting suicide bombers and blowing up buses and food markets filled with Jews? Yet, Wertheimer continued, during these years of activity, we supported the Rabin government's peace efforts. We rarely agreed with Mr. Jacobs' outlook on Israel. But in October 2000, after Arafat had launched the Second Intifada, it became obvious that those who believed that Arafat and his followers desired peace with Israel had deluded themselves. Opponents of Oslo, in fact, had been right all along. Of course we were right. We took the time to learn what Arafat was saying. We made the effort to grasp the reality of terrorism that slaughtered Jews on the streets of Israel. We were diligent in uncovering the truth. Political correctness never entered our thoughts. Jewish lives mattered. Why did it take over 600 dead Jews and 1,400 attacks for some to open their eyes? I don't know. This is something Brad and I talked about, and I can tell you he was very compassionate about how pathetic the Jewish community was. I was less pathetic. I'm glad that none of those were tape recorded. Wertheimer acknowledged that Brad's response to that development was not to utter four words. It could have been, I told you so. Instead, Brad, the gentleman, again used these nine other words, brothers and sisters, we are in this all together. That was Brad. I obviously was in the I told you so crowd, but my choice of words was quite different. T.S. Eliot once wrote, suffer us not to mock ourselves with falsehood. Have we learned? We brothers and sisters have been given the tremendous honor of being Jews living at a time that our bubbies and Zadies could only dream of, a time when the majority of our Jewish people today are living the miracle of Eretz Yisrael. If you read books written in the 30s and 40s, and I love reading old books because they're so off base, there was not a chance that the Jews would ever come back to their land. The world saw in 1948 a heavenly voice, and again in 1967. And it marveled for that moment. Look at what their God did for them. But being a blessed generation comes with challenges and responsibilities. Israel doesn't need the world's love, but we must demand its respect. Jews both here and in Israel don't have the option to act like shmatis, like fools, like friars. If we want respect, we must first show self-respect. If we want to be a light unto the nations, we should start acting like it. On a mission to Israel years ago, it was Brad who goaded me into going to a place called Hebron. I was scared to death. He looked at me and said, what are you afraid of? He knew. But if Brad was going, how could I chicken out? I was the tough guy, right? On our way, Brad stopped the bus, we got out, and he said, Berger, he always called me by my last name, come over here. I want to take a picture of us standing, mind you, together in front of that hill. So what's that hill? He said, it's called Har Choma. That barren hill in the distance had caused quite an international problem for Israel at the time because the world didn't like Jews building homes for Jews. It's a wonderful thing, wonderful thing. And he looked at me and said, Berger, one day Jews are going to be living there. There's the picture, it's on my desk every day. It's an amazing thing. There are now 2,500 Jewish families, many of them with 4 to 6 kids, living in specifically the spot that stops the Arabs from being able to expand south toward Efrat. And I can tell you, having just been in Efrat a few months ago, they're now building north on Dagon 9 to kind of come closer. It's a wonderful thing. It's a wonderful thing. In Hebron with Brad, I met some of the most inspiring Jews I had ever encountered, and many of Brad's friends became my friends to this day. Everyone in Hebron felt the profound sense of loss when they heard of Brad's passing. He was truly loved there. The lifeblood of Israel, with its triumphs and its heartaches, pulsed through Brad's veins. It was not uncommon that by 8 in the morning, I would get a call from either Brad or Ira Khan telling me what happened in Israel that past day. I often made it a point to call Brad early on Wednesday afternoons. That's when he was at his busiest and his happiest, because he was putting together the Israel news. I always wanted to know how busy he was. I always knew how busy he was, but it was just a way of sort of nudging him. He worked best under stress. Could always hear in his voice not only a sense of urgency, but a heartfelt sense of purpose. He knew that for many Jews, he was providing their weekly dose of Israel, and there was nowhere else that they could get it. In a city of 250,000 Jews, no organization, no newspaper had ever stepped up to the plate before Brad's Israel News to make Israel the number one priority. I have to tell you, every summer I go to a very liberal institution called the Hartman Institute. And 2 years ago, two of the rabbis you see in the top 50 rabbis of America gave a drash. And one of the subjects was, what can you speak about from your pulpit? Now, these are allegedly conservative rabbis. I don't know what that means anymore. And they both said the same thing. The two things we can't speak about from our pulpit are Israel and God. But what else can they speak about? Social justice, LBJ, whatever it is. I'm not always welcome there, but they take my money. Therefore, I'm still going, and so this may be my last, only because they're going to kick me out. What I've never quite understood is, what difference is a non-Orthodox Jew, and believe me, I'm not Orthodox. I do a lot of things that Brad used to give me stuff, shtick about. I'll use the word shtick. He insisted that whenever we met, you know, we had to go to a kosher restaurant. Downtown, there's very few kosher restaurants, so it's really something that was a pain. But hey, putting out Israel News took an enormous amount of dedication, hard work, and love. He would always end our conversations with a chuckle and his unique brand of self-effacing humor. Gotta run. Talk to you tomorrow. I have missed those moments dearly. They were very special. I have missed his emails that began with BJSKOK1. I still have that on my list of email addresses. I've heard the superficial rhetoric from a number of organizations claiming to stand with Israel, but the reality is that for most Americanized Jews, Israel is a sideshow. For most of us in this room, although it is a main event, for those of us who every week eagerly look forward to our Israel news, the empty plastic holders may be gone, but the memory of Brad laughing at me still puts a smile on my face. And believe me, I don't let many people laugh at me. But he had a lot of ways to keep a smile on my face. Finally, I would like to share a story about another proud Jew, because there are some proud Jews out there. And some of these stories should be read to our children, especially when we use some of these men as mentors for who we would like our children to aspire to be. The room was hushed as Louis Brandeis came forward. It was a dramatic moment, the first time the exclusive Harvard Honor Society had ever accepted a Jew. For Brandeis, it had not been easy. For the past 3 years, other students uninvited had sat next to him as he ate his lunch, saying things like, "Brandeis, you're brilliant. You could end up on the Supreme Court, except that you are a Jew. Why don't you convert? Then all your problems will be solved." Brandeis had listened, but not responded. By his senior year in law school, Brandeis' preeminence could not be denied. Jewish or not, he was invited to join the exclusive Harvard Honor Society. On the evening of his official induction, tension filled the auditorium. All eyes were on Brandeis as he walked to the lectern. Slowly, he looked around the room, and softly he began, "I am sorry I was born a Jew." With that, the room erupted in applause, an explosion of shouts and cheers. They had finally convinced him, they had prevailed. Waiting for silence, Brandeis began again. "I am sorry I was born a Jew, because only because I wish I had the privilege of choosing Judaism on my own." This time there was no shouting, no cheers, just stunned silence. The members of the society listened silently, awed by the strength of his character and conviction, his single-minded courage. When he finished, they gave him a standing ovation. Brad purposely chose the path of Israel activism. When he saw the need for our Jewish community to reconnect to Israel, he did what he believed was necessary. Yes, there were lots of fools who went along with the Oslo charade. It was the politically correct, socially accepted thing to do. But whether it was a rally in front of the consulate, a phone call to Ira Silverstein to introduce a bill in the state Senate, or to create Israel news, Brad was that swoosh that you see on Nike. Just do it. Cheryl related that in his last days, Brad had communicated to her that we should have done more for Gush Katif. Where do you think that came from? Every few days I would prod him, "What is your community doing about Gush Katif?" Our politically correct Jewish organization respond to tsunamis, floods, and earthquakes, but when it came to fellow Jews, silence. Some may still remember my orange star. Brad grimaced, but at every Jewish event for 6 months before the expulsion, I wore an orange Jewish star to every Jewish event. It was very expensive after a while, but it didn't matter. And people would come up to me and say, "That offends me." And I would say, "That's what it's supposed to do." And some people, some Reform rabbis took great offense to it, so I figured that was my badge of honor. Brad was very disappointed in the Orthodox religious Zionist response to the Jewish victims of the expulsion, and equally devastated about the aftermath. That rabbis had said so little, that Jewish organizations had done so little, that people he counted on were silent. Where was the sense of responsibility for your fellow Jewish brothers and sisters? It was a betrayal. And as I said to Brad, don't expect anything from Reform and conservative Jews. But of all the Jews who should know better, it's your Orthodox community, the supposed religious Zionists, that should have acted. Thou shalt not stand idly by. What were they afraid of? Being looked at as a Jew? No kidding. What the Torah teaches us is that Jewish unity is a myth. It's a nice soundbite, but it's never been the case. On the contrary, we are a very contentious family. Conflict has been our brotherly history. There was Abraham and Lot, Jacob and Esau, Joseph and his brothers, Moses and the Jews who turned on him to expose him to Pharaoh, Ben-Gurion and Dagon. And as the rabbi said, Joshua, Caleb, and the 10 other guys. We remember Joshua and Caleb. The 10 other guys, not so important. The only thing that almost united Jews, and I say almost because I've done a lot of unfortunate reading on the subject, were piles of 6 million Jews after the Shoah. And so we are in this evening remembering our friend, my personal friend and accomplice, Brad. He is so dearly missed. His pretty blues, his smile, his sense of humor, best of all, his chuckle, his love of Israel and our people. And I guess when I remembered Brad, I recall the words of a rabbi, Abba Hillel Silver. The people of Israel live. Can I part company with this band whom I love so dearly? They are the bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh, soul of my soul. They are my people. Their quest is mine. They will live within me, and I will live with them, within them, forever. This is Brad's legacy. That is why we are remembering him here tonight and why I miss him so much. Tonight, I leave you with my three words. Hazak, hazak, v'nisazek. Thank you.
Cheryl Jacobs Lewin, Brad's beloved sister, will now say a few words.
Oh, you are all such tough acts to follow. Rabbi Soloveitchik, thank you. I know that Bradley absolutely adored your father. And a great story that people may not know about Brad and your father, Yeshiva Brisk wanted to honor Bradley. Now, Bradley started off at Skokie Yeshiva when your father was Rosh Yeshiva there, and then when he started Brisk, Bradley asked our parents if he could go with, and my parents said, it's a new yeshiva, are you sure you want to do that? What's the accreditation? And who's going? But he said, I want to go with Rav Aaron. So off he went, and Bradley had been, I don't know, I can't remember how many years after, and somebody had called and wanted to honor Bradley at a dinner for Brisk, and Bradley was not interested. He didn't want the covid. He didn't want it. So he turned down whoever it was that called, and apparently the person called again and went back and forth. Well, then your father called Bradley. Bradley said, how do you say no to Rav Aaron Soloveitchik? So I know that Bradley had a great place in his heart for your wonderful father. He turned to your father for a tremendous amount of advice. Lish, you were Brad's legal advisor, his friend. I know that you were one of the people that he'd pick up the phone and call and say, what do you think? And he was very concerned about how things that would appear in the Israel news would come across in the community. And there were people that he would call for advice, and I know that you were one of them, and I know that one of the most wonderful things that he did was, again, the going to your Simcha in California, and that was just something that was just so important to him. And again, that was the last Simcha that he had attended, and he was very proud that he was able to attend that. Berger, Brad loved you. Oh my goodness, and that picture, and I have a copy of that picture also. And I get that one also? Thank you. Bradley had a relationship with everybody in this room. Except Laser, he didn't know you, but I've got the relationship with you. And I'm really overwhelmed that all of you have come here. It's, you know, Berger, as you said, you know, 10 years. It's just like, okay, and you know what? I am going to pick up, starting tomorrow, because of what you've said, I will, God willing, or as they say, Billy Netter, do a learning of, I will do that. And, okay, so, and then what I'll do is I'll email you and say, I finished another chapter. I want to thank all of you for being here, and a few people who really put this together. Joel, I can see you. You can dip away, but you can't hide. And there's people in Israel who wanted to be here but couldn't. When they told me, when Joel and Shabbos said that they wanted to do something, and there were some people on the emails, and I thought, this is amazing that 10 years somebody wanted to do this. And what would Bradley say? Bradley would say, okay. Bradley was very humble, and I think he would have been amazed that all of you people came out on such a cold night to be here. And Rabbi, thank you for the facility. Religious Zionism was something that was very, very important to Bradley. And something that Berger had mentioned about the first time that he went to Hebron. All of Israel was important to Bradley. And Hebron had possibly the most special place in Bradley's huge heart. Again, Bradley loved all of Israel. Bradley's last words, we should have done more for Katif. Absolutely. That was the last thing he put on his spellboard. Hebron, whenever Bradley could be in Israel, he went to Hebron. And I have gone to Hebron, and thinking about how hilly it is there, and how did Bradley do this in a wheelchair? And our friend Yehudi Tayar in Israel, who was somebody else that Bradley would also call in the middle of the night and in the morning when he's, Yehudi, I'm on deadline. And he would just check to make sure that the story that he was about to write was right. And Yehudi would be there to push him through and say, you know, why can't you make these hills less big? But I think Brad would be overwhelmed with the new digs that are going on in Hebron. And if you haven't been to Hebron in a long time, you must go there. You must see the new dig that they're doing. It's amazing. I've gone by myself. I'm not afraid. If you're a little concerned, they do have buses that are bulletproof buses that will go from Yerushalayim. If you are concerned, I can even help arrange for people who have bulletproof cars to bring you there. I go on Shabbos, I walk around on Shabbos, I see the nasty, evil TIPH people who can't understand what I'm doing there because I'm blonde and I don't keep my head covered, and they can't understand how a blonde American can be in Hebron on a Shabbos. And when they find out that I'm Jewish, you're Jewish? These are the United Nations observers that caused a tremendous amount of problems in Hebron. One of the things that we had talked about for this evening, because, you know, we're going to study in merit, but it's also something that's important to do, is to give tzedakah. Now, many people give tzedakah for any number of reasons, and we tried to come up with something that would be appropriate, and we decided that it would be something for Hebron. And I contacted Uri Karzin, who's from the Chicago area, who went to yeshiva here and was a chevrusa of Bradley's, who happens to be the director general of the Jewish community of Hebron, which is really amazing, thinking about, I mean, I can remember Uri as a kid, and now he's big macher there. And I said, okay, we're going to do this for Bradley, and Uri was sorry that he couldn't be here this evening, and he said, I'll come up with an idea and get back to you. So there's many, many projects in Hebron, but one of the things that he thought that would be really something very special to do would be to give tzedakah for something called Hebron Connections, which is a program that literally for $12 per soldier or per policeman, they're able to come to the brand new Hebron Museum. It's a multimedia museum, and watch an amazing movie about the history of Hebron. There's soldiers and police and border patrol who go to Hebron who have no clue as to what they're doing there. They don't know why they're there, just because they've been sent there, or because there's a bunch of Jews who are fighting against the Arabs, and this enclave of Jews are trying to hold out because many of them, and a lot of them, have not been raised with the knowledge of the history of Israel, from Jerusalem to what's going on in the north to what's going on in the south, and certainly not to Hebron. So Uri said, if somebody wants to make a donation to this particular project, The money can be sent to the Chevron Fund office in New York. And whatever amount you want to give, a dollar, $10, whatever. But when Uri said it's literally, it's $12 covers one soldier to be able to come in and learn about the history, because they have to have somebody coming into the museum and somebody instructing the soldiers. So that is what happens. And Uri said when they come away from having seen the museum, and if those of you who have been to Hebron before remember the old museum in the bottom of Beit Hadassah, that's where the new museum is now. And it's really quite amazing. And there's, again, it's a multimedia movie experience. I strongly recommend that you try to get there if you can. And if something can help a soldier understand more of why they are there, of why they are outside of the Machpelah, of why they are on the streets in the Jewish community of Hebron, and why the Jews that are living there are there, then, again, then that would be something in something good in Bradley's memory. Again, if there's other things that you wish to do in Bradley's memory, that's fine too. If y'all want to go to Hebron and are concerned and don't know how to get there, you can call me and I'll be very happy to set you up with some special people that live there. Again, 10 years is amazing. So much has happened, good things and bad things. And I look around and we've had good things in our lives and sad things in our lives over the last 10 years. And I kind of use 10 years as a benchmark. And I look around and say, how did it go so fast? It seems just like yesterday. And I can remember you at the hospital the night that Bradley died. And I can remember blurs of the funeral service, and I remember the Shloshim and Berger, you talked there, and then I ran to Israel for the Shloshim that many in the Chicago community helped to organize there. And I think back in 10 years and I go, wow, have we really gotten that old in 10 years? And in my mind, I look at Bradley and I still remember him before the transplant operation, after the transplant operation, after losing his legs. And I'm always in awe. And when I go to Israel, and even in New York, there's people that find out that I'm Brad's sister, and they go, wow, and they start to tell me amazing stories. So tonight, the story that you told Rabbi Soloveitchik is a story that I hadn't heard before about Phil. Leish, another story that you told I hadn't heard before. And Berger, I could listen to you for hours, you know that. So again, I thank you all, and for the people that put this together, and Shabsi and Joel, Rabbi Eisenberg and others, thank you very much. Hang on a second. Sorry, that's a little aside. So thank you again, and go out there and continue to do whatever you're all doing that's so wonderful, and in memory of Bradley, or in memory of whatever and whoever you want it to be, but all about Israel. Thank you.
We're going to conclude our program with some tfilos and kamole, led by Rabbi Jerry Eisenberg, the Executive Director of the Religious Zionists of Chicago. We want to thank everyone for coming for the Azkara, for our good friend and relative, Chaim Bezalel ben Binyamin Utvasha Golda, Zichron Levracha.
Use your eyes. Say the tfilo for the chayalim, the soldiers, those who are captive, the tefillah for the State of Israel, and we'll end with a kel mole in memory of Brad. Misha berach avoseinu Avraham Yitzchak v'Yaakov, v'yuvarech es chayolei tzva ha'gonol Yisrael,
עומדים על משמר ארצנו וערי אלוהינו מגבול הלבנון ובמדבר מצרים מן היום הגדול עד לבוא הרבו ביבשה באוויר וביום. ייתן אדוני את אויבינו הקומים עלינו ניגפים לפניהם. הקדוש ברוך הוא ישמור ויציל את חיילינו מכל צרה וצוקה מכל נגע ומחלה וישלח ברכה והצלחה בכל מעשה ידיהם. ידבר שונאינו תחתיהם ויעטרם בחסר ישועה ועטרת ניצחון. וקוים בהם הכסוב כי אדוני אלוהיכם ההולך עמכם ולוחם לכם עם אויביכם להושיע אתכם ולומר אמן. מי שברך אבותינו אברהם יצחק ויעקב יוסף משה אהרן דוד ושלמה יבורך וישמור וינצור נדרי צבא הגנה לישראל ואת כל השבויים בסוף שער אחינו בית ישראל הנשואים בצרה ובשביה. בעבור שאנו מתפללים בעבורם הקדוש ברוך הוא ימלא רחמים עליהם ויוציאם מחושך וצל מובס ומוסרוסיהם ינתק וממצוקותיהם יושיעם וישיבם מהרה לחיק משפחותיהם. יודו לאדוני חסדו ונפלאותיו לבני אדם ויקוים בהם מקרא שכתוב ופדויי אדוני ישבון ובואו ציון ברינה ושמחה שלום על ראשם ששון ושמחה ישיגו ונשאו יגון ואנחה ונאמר אמן. אבינו שבשמיים צור ישראל וגואלו ברכס מדינת ישראל ראשית צמיחה סגולסנו הגן עולה באברס חסדך ופרוס עליו סוכה שלומך ושלח אורך ועמיתך לראשי השרה ויועציה וסכנים בעצה טובה מלפניך. חזק את ידי מגיני ארץ קדשנו והנחילים אלוהינו ישועה והטרס ניצחון תיאטרם ונשאת שלום בארץ ושמחה שלום ליושביה. ויסחינו כל בית ישראל בקדנו בכל ארצות בזוריהם וסוליכם מהירה כמיוס לציון עירך ולירושלים משכן שמך. ככסוב בשרס משה עבדך אם יהיה נדחך בקצה השמיים משם יקבצך אדוני אלוהיך ומשם יקחך וביאך אדוני אלוהיך לארץ אשר ירשו אבותיך וירשתה וטיבך והרבך מאבותיך. ויאחד לבבינו לאהבה ולירא שמך ולשמור את כל דברי סורסך ושלח לנו מהרה בן דוד משיח צדקך לפתוס מחכי קץ ישועתך. הופע בהדר גאון וזכר על כל יושבי סבל ארצך ויאמר כל אשר נשמה ויאפו אדוני אלוהי ישראל מלך ומלכוסו בכל משלו אמן סלה. אל מלא רחמים שוכן במרומים המצא מנוחה נכונה על כנפי השכינה במעלות קדושים וטהורים כזוהר הרקיעה מזהירים אס נשמס חיים בצלאל בן בנימין ודבש הגולדה שהולך לעולמו. בעבור שאנו מספללים עד אז קורס נשמוסו בגן עדן תהי מנוחוסו לכן בעל הרחמים יסתירהו בססר כנפיו לעולמים ויצרור ביצרור החיים אס נשמוסו. אדוני הוא נחלוסו וינוח ושלום על משכבו ונאמר אמן.